On Thursday, September 21st, it was an open mic format at the Rise and Shine Restaurant's Breezy Breakfast, covering a wide variety of topics such as Guelph's founder John Galt, the downtown parking plan, large protests and counter-protests at City Hall on September 20th, and much more. The open mic was moderated by Morgan.
Good morning, Breezy Breakfast. Today is Thursday, September the 21st, and we are having an open mic with a very intimate crowd today. Next Monday, our city council will be voting on a refreshed territorial acknowledgement. Sorry, next Tuesday. Thank you, Susan. It's on Tuesday. Council meetings are on Tuesdays now. And I am going to take this moment to read what the proposed territorial acknowledgement for Guelph is. As we gather, let us take time to reflect on our privilege to live and work in Guelph, a city built over rich Indigenous histories. We are guests here, and we should reflect upon the responsibility to care for this land, the people who live here today, and the generations to come. If our actions today can move us towards reconciliation, we should take pause and make those decisions with intention and gratitude. This place we call Guelph has served as traditional lands and a place of refuge for many peoples over time, but more specifically, the Adirondack and the Haudenosaunee. This land is held as the treaty lands and territory with the Mississaugas of the Credit First Nation. Guelph lies directly adjacent to the Haldimand Tract and is part of a long-established traditional hunting ground for the Six Nations of the Grand River. Many First Nations, Inuit, and Métis peoples who have come from across Turtle Island call Guelph home today. And one of the reasons why the city is doing this is because when the territorial acknowledgement was first brought in, it was recognized that it was a living document. And as such, it was time. It was absolutely time for it to change. Now we'll see if that is the form that actually ends up on the report for council on the 26th. And like I said, we are having an open mic. This is when we get to hear about what we all want to talk about, things that are happening in the community, things that we have concerns about. We do not have Councillor Phil Ault with us today, so any city questions may not get a direct answer today, and we will make sure that we get any answers that people want in as timely a fashion as we possibly can. So I don't know, is there somebody online that has a burning question? Is there somebody in here that has a hot topic that they want to get on to?
Morgan, it's Warren. Listen, based on your land acknowledgement, which I think was fabulous, I have an issue and I keep coming back to it no matter where I go, and that's the bloody 200th anniversary that's coming forth. You know, you talk to anybody in the city, no one knows even the fact that it exists. This is what my big hang-up is. But, you know, we talk about the Indigenous community. Has anybody approached the Indigenous community to come up with some sort of fabulous presentation for the 200th anniversary? No. Has anybody approached the Roman Catholic Church, which is so important in Guelph and runs Guelph, and with all the problems with it, about bringing the Pope over here? Has anybody approached through the government to bring King Charles over here? Because the last name is Guelph. So, you know, there is so much potential, so much opportunities, and we're sitting, and all we get from the city, we're working on it, we're putting a budget together that'll come through in 26, and the anniversary is in 27. Anybody in the business world, anybody in and doing anything with budgeting knows that you prepared for 5 years. And so are we saying we're not really interested in celebrating the 200th anniversary? You know?
Okay, Warren, I do know that this is a question that you have brought up. One of the things that I do want to bring to mind is the fact that the next budget that is being brought forth later this year is a multi-year budget, and it does go out to 2027. So there is a good likelihood that there will be some money earmarked in this next budget to make sure that we've got some stuff going on for the 200. There is an individual within the city that is on this. Unfortunately, I do not remember that person's name off the top of my head.
Dana Evans has been the one assigned from City Hall.
So, you know, as we get closer to the end of this year and the budget and we see what's in there, I think that will be our best opportunity to really see where they're planning. And once we know what's in the budget, then that gives more opportunity for people to be able to delegate for the things that they would really like to see. And I'm just wondering if anyone here in the restaurant would like to make a comment about the 200th anniversary. Susan would like to make a comment.
I don't know if you noticed or anyone noticed, Warren, but at John Galt Day, it was the holiday Monday in August, there wasn't even a notice or the name you on the city website. All it said was civic holiday. When first it was declared John Galt Day, we ran a celebration where we had 10,000 people at the River Run, parades and displays and concerts and the whole thing. And since then, the city has gradually cut down until this year. There was no, the name is gone. So that tells you how much they care about that.
Hey, you know what, Susan, that's very interesting on that. But you know, the thing that gets me, we talk about the city is putting together a budget. But you know, the industry, the world out there also is putting together budgets. They're doing it for 5 years. And if no one even approaches Linamar or any of the companies in Guelph, how do we expect them to get involved? You know, we're saying we're putting a budget together, but so does the organizations that are out there. And if they want to support, because they're very key people in the city of Guelph and running the city of Guelph, they got to know about it. But no one is even bringing this thing up.
Yep, Warren, I'm going to interject because we do have someone else that would like to make another comment. And I do just want to address what Susan was talking about with John Galt. I'm not saying that this is why, but seeing John Galt's name slowly be less prominent is not necessarily a bad thing as we work towards truth and reconciliation.
No, I agree.
Now we need to have
that's,
something.
But that's not my fault. That, you know, and I agree. But I agree with Susan's bringing up these points about things that are slowly disappearing from what was a great city and is a great city.
My comment was basically what Morgan was talking about. I wasn't sure, but I was thinking John Galt might be one of those people we don't want to talk about anymore.
I'd like to jump in there for a moment because I think what happens in talking about people that we don't want to talk about anymore, we forget that we are applying our standards to people that lived over 200 years ago. I think Canada has a tendency to self-flagellate and forget about the things that we are doing in the present to improve the lives of everybody.
So, Antonia, I totally agree. I don't think that we don't need to talk about John Galt. I think the point is to not celebrate John Galt anymore. And Susan has an idea as well.
If you knew your history of John Galt, nobody would say that. He worked with Joseph Brant and worked on integrating the First Nations in the founding of the city. He was here 2 years before the founding and met with Brant and worked with him and the whole group of people, including a lot of the First Nations. So it's like castigating John A. Macdonald. You take one sentence out of what he did, or Egerton Ryerson, and the rest of the life is ignored. But that wasn't true for Galt. He honestly worked with the First Nations, and his books also show that as well. So we have to be fair and rely on real history, not manufactured history.
Thank you, Susan. I did not know that.
I think that's great, Susan. That's a very good point.
And we can always count on our resident historian to set us straight when we get something incorrect. And you know what? That's important. It's really important that we do have our facts straight. And I think that was evidenced a lot yesterday. So I don't know how many people are aware of the 1 million man march for kids and the counter protests that happened across Canada. I'm pretty sure the majority of people at least heard something about it. And here in Guelph, we had a really good turnout with the people that are hoping to stop people that want to stop our children from knowing that people exist that aren't like them. I'm just wondering if anybody online has anything that they would like to pipe in on with regard to sexual orientation and gender identity education within our schools and what was going on with the protests across Canada yesterday. I know I've got a lot to say, and I think Juanita might have a thing or two to say, but I'd like to open it up to those online first.
Well, you know what? I guess if we're talking this particular topic, the one thing I got to say is I think somewhere along the line, it's the parents with the kids until the kids become of age that should be controlling and involved with this particular topic with their kids. I wouldn't want someone out there who I never knew telling my kid what they can do and what they can't do if it doesn't come from me or my wife.
Do you not have a relationship with your child's teacher when your children are in school? This is what this is about. This is about parents thinking that there is explicit, age-inappropriate sexual education happening within our school system, which is untrue. This is about parents who have this idea that their children are being taught things that they're not being told about. This is not true. Every parent has the right to remove their child from any instruction within the education system if they feel that it does not align with their teachings within their home. This is evidence.
I'm just going to jump in there for a moment. I think one of the main objections is the fact that if a child decides to use different pronouns or a different name at school, then the teacher is not obliged to tell the parent. And I think that that is dangerous because it encourages the child to think that lying to their parents is okay, and furthermore that school is a safer place than home is. Secondly, so that's my first point, because I think that my second point is that I think that the tendency is to use the words no hate, and that is not the mission or the goal of the 100 person march for children. They don't hate people. They don't want to erase people. They are concerned about their children, and they are concerned about confusing their children and age inappropriate curriculum for their children. That is what the concern is about. It is not about hatred. So those are the two things I would like to mention. The third thing is that we are talking about LGBTQ, and this is a community, let's say, that there are lesbians and gays and bisexuals, and they are defined by who they love. Whereas trans and queer, and I suppose many of the others are defined by some subjective sense of who they are. So there's also confusion regarding that. I'm not going to go into gender ideology because I don't want to make this into an academic discussion. But I think that goes along with some of the things that adults can talk about, but it might not be appropriate to get into it with children.
Okay, Tanya, Juanita has something to say, and I just want to bring up two specific points from what was in speeches yesterday. One, Counselor Erin Caton, her 12-year-old daughter, was astounded that there was anybody that would want to stop people from knowing about families like hers. And second, one of the speakers was unsure of their sexuality as a child, and now as an adult is able to have conversations with their parents about how horrible their upbringing was because they felt like they had to hide who they were. And this individual's parents are now saying to this person, thank you so much for going out in public and speaking about it, because if we could go back and do it differently and not harm you in the way that we did unknowingly because we didn't have the information, we would go back in a second. So those are just two points to counter from yesterday. And I'm going to hand it over to Juanita for a comment as well.
Thanks, Morgan. So to your first point about children who don't feel comfortable, who are supposed to lie to their parents, there are people who choose not to tell their parents about who they are because they know their parents. I think for a lot of kids, as far back as we've had schools, we've had school be a safe place for people who didn't have it at home. So if you can't tell your parents and you can't tell your teachers, who do you talk to? Where do you find people that you can talk to about who you are? Or are you just supposed to bury yourself until you're an adult? The second point about no hate. So full disclosure, I got there late yesterday, but I got to hear about some of the things that happened yesterday. And number one, there are a lot of different people coming out to these gatherings for various reasons. Some of it is not understanding what it's about. Some of it is that what they say it's about, that's not what it's about. It's about turning right-wing, the right-wing agenda, getting it out there to people who aren't political, for one thing, and don't always know what's going on. And a lot of people that just care about the kids and that's what they think it's all about, but it isn't. The other part of that, the thing about hate is, I heard yesterday after the main event happened from people who had incredibly hateful and violent comments made to them by some of the people on that side yesterday. And that's where we're at, and that's really disturbing to me, and I hope to everyone else out there. Look at who you're with, and like, you're known by the company you keep, so it's hard to know who exactly in that group is a hateful bigot, but some of them are. And to the third point about not knowing the difference between gender identity and sexuality and all that stuff, that's where we don't want people who don't understand it to be trying to teach their kids about it. So we need to educate properly, however we can do that. And hopefully parents understand, but if they don't, maybe they should.
Morgan, can I throw something in here?
Go ahead, Warren.
Okay, you know, the diversity of our immigration system bringing people into the country Isn't that one of the key problems that we are encountering, is that the different beliefs of different nationalities all brought into or focused into one location, which happens to be through the school, and the diversity of all those people that are there. Tremendous differences between people from, or immigrants being brought in from any country into Canada. And the understanding of that, which I guess has to really go back to the school systems, to understand and get that out. Now, they're concentrating on the kids, but who is concentrating on the parents and giving them an education into the different religious beliefs and the different things that our kids or ourselves can even encounter in a school or in society?
And Warren, that is a really good point. And just to sort of give an anecdote from yesterday, there was a new Canadian. I believe it was a young mom from Somalia, and she was protecting her children because that is what people in her community told her she needed to do. And then she had a conversation with one of the people from, let's call it the no hate side. And she stopped and she listened and she absorbed and she thanked the no hate people for taking the time to actually explain what was being protested, what was being counter protested, gave the person on the the no hate side a hug and completely changed their mind. So what you're talking about there, Warren, is absolutely essential. When it comes to the new Canadians, they do need to have people help them understand how things work here in Canada. You've got the option to remove your children from any curriculum that you want to. If you don't want your kids learning about history, you can pull them from history class. If you don't want them learning about math, well, I don't think you can pull them from math class, because that's one of like the core things that you've got to do. But, you know, if there's one thing in the math class that you didn't like and you wanted to remove your child, I don't see how the schools could stop you from removing your child. What Erin Caton said about her daughter and not understanding why there are people out there that want others to not learn about families like hers is probably what struck me the most, beyond the one sign of the one speaker who said that the only reason that she's alive was because of a safe teacher. So unless someone else has something really burning that they want to bring up about this, I think we've covered sort of both sides of the issue, and there's lots more discussion that needs to happen moving forward about making sure that we have inclusion for all people within our public education school system. Does anybody have another topic that they would like to bring up? I'm thinking maybe the new downtown parking master plan that's coming in. That's always a favorite topic in Guelph, and I'm hearing crickets. All right, well, you know what? This is funny. We've got three people. We've got four people here in the restaurant, and three of us don't own a car.
That's hard to believe.
Actually, if you include someone across the way, I don't believe they have a car either. Okay, so we've got five in here, and four of us do not own a vehicle. This bodes well for active transportation. I see that we've got John Fisher, or we had John Fisher. Did he disappear? He did. Okay, Mike Darman, I see you. We've started talking about, you know, active transportation here.
Sure. Parking minimums downtown Guelph is the big subject coming to City Council. I think it's next week. And I'm just kind of wondering what the rest of the group is thinking about what direction we're heading in with parking minimums in the downtown core.
Okay, so right now the proposal is to bring the parking minimums to 0.85. And that is a report that is for the next 5 years. My personal opinion, I really like this downtown master plan for parking because it is for 5 years while we are going through the process of revitalization in downtown, and it gives us the opportunity to revisit this after the revitalization has happened. We've seen how the Baker District parking has brought itself into the parking diaspora downtown, and just give us a little bit of runway. I know that for myself personally, I would love to see on-street parking paid as soon as possible. Also recognizing that while the downtown revitalization is going on, charging people for parking downtown during construction could be a detriment to our local businesses. So for me, this parking master, downtown parking master plan strikes a very good balance for where we are right now. Mike, what do you think about it?
I'm actually thinking that I'm more in favor of reducing those minimums even further. I'm even going as far as saying we should get rid of them altogether. Anything I've read is it's developers can still actually build as much parking as they want to. It's just that they aren't forced to build a certain number per unit. So I think most cases that I've read about, the developer usually knows the market better than, say, even the city does. And the developer is actually taking a big chance on removing parking minimums or not putting any parking in altogether. And I also think there's a market for people who don't have a car or don't want a car, and they want to live in a downtown environment, and they're just fine with having no parking at all.
Hey, I have a comment. Because I live in geared to income housing, I'll just say most of us don't have cars. And I'm wondering now, if we had no minimum amount of parking space, if it would be easier to get geared to income housing and social housing built.
I totally agree with you on that point. This specific parking plan is for the downtown, and the likelihood of bringing geared to income housing right downtown, unless the people over at 90 Cardinal are planning on doing something like that, doubtful. So, Susan's just mentioning, maybe somebody will do something with where the library is currently once we get the new one brought in. Okay, so we seem to have exhausted parking unless Mike has something else that he'd like to talk about.
Morgan, I think I just kind of was wanting to hear some other people's opinion on it because I'm possibly going to delegate on it next week. So thanks for that.
I just have one thing to jump in there. I would never be able to live downtown if I didn't have a parking space because I don't work in Guelph and there is no transit to where I work. This is unfortunate, but it is something that there's nothing I can do about. And it's not like I work in a big city center like Kitchener, where there might be plans for transit or Hamilton. So for people like me, I would need a parking spot and I would not be able to live downtown. That's just one thing about the parking minimums that I'd like to comment on. Thank you.
That's a very valuable comment. It really is.
And there are a lot of people that absolutely do need their vehicles. One of the things that I've heard sort of floating around, I'm not 100% sure that it's in the report, but as an option, we've got these three towers and getting ready to put in an underground municipal garage. So by partnering with some of the downtown landlords and having those spaces be shared spaces like they do in a lot of other cities, so the residents have them from 6 p.m. until 7 a.m. And then it's open for the public to use during regular business hours, Monday to Friday. I think that, you know, that kind of thing could be an excellent way of getting everyone that needs parking downtown, having parking downtown, and definitely uncoupling any parking from your unit, whether it's a rental unit or a purchased unit, would be incredibly beneficial. And I think that a lot of the developers are starting to understand it, that uncoupling parking is a way to give more people more choice.
I just want to add that if you can't get to places outside of Guelph with public transit, check it out regularly, because they're adding trips all over the place. I recently discovered there is a GO bus now from Kitchener all the way to Hamilton, and it stops in Guelph, it stops in Burlington and Waterloo. They're adding more trips. I think too about Montreal, where most people don't have cars because it's inconvenient. They have to move their car from spot to spot. They have to be really careful or lucky to get a parking spot, which means the public transit there is really efficient.
Yeah, and during the pandemic, the mayor pushed transit big time, took that opportunity to use political will to improve transit big time in Montreal. So props to her.
And it's good to hear that. You know, one of the things I was thinking when I was reading through the downtown master plan for parking is, why isn't there a joint plan for downtown parking and transit? Because they are so intrinsically linked. And then I found out that they do work together. So that makes me happy to know that the transit authority is involved in the conversations of the parking staff downtown. And we are coming up on the 9 o'clock hour before too much longer. I know this is a open mic and we've got a small crowd today, intimate, lots of conversation. Is there another topic that we would like to bring up, or are we going to have an early end to Breezy today? I think we're going to have an early end to Breezy today. So I thank everybody for all of their comments on some of these burning topics within our city. And actually, you know what? I just thought of one more thing. I've got an email that I think Susan might have something to say about a downtown heritage advisory committee that I'm looking to get onto. So Susan, what do you know about this? You don't know anything about the study. Does anybody online know about the study that's going to be happening? I'm going to let Susan just explain a little bit about what this study is about.
I know they've started a study to make the downtown a heritage district, which allows a lot more control of what goes in. I believe it's on Have Your Say. Tanya may have checked that right now. So I think it's in the beginning stages. I'm sorry, I haven't kept up with that. I should. Thanks.
Oh, that's okay, Susan. They've got a call out right now for people to be part of the committee. And I put my name out there as a community member at large. They're looking for people with expertise and people like me that just love heritage. All right, I think we're going to call that the end, Tanya. What are our announcements?
We've got a community planting at Courtright Hills on Saturday, September 30th from 9:30 to 12:30. It's happening rain or shine. Bring your water bottles, some gardening gloves, wear sturdy footwear, and bring a shovel if you've got one. On Tuesday, September the 26th, there will be a city council meeting. Items on the agenda will include an update on the strong mayor powers, the downtown parking master plan, and an item for discussion is Heritage Guelph asking that the province repair the stone wall at the Ontario Reformatory. And I say good luck to that. At the Guelph Public Library, there's going to be some speakers. There always are interesting speakers at the Guelph Public Library. So I encourage everybody to go onto their website to check out their events. I'd like to highlight two speakers. On Tuesday, the 24th of October, from 6 to 7 p.m., Jay Wilson will be presenting The Unfortunate Man, a true story about a Guelph man who I suppose was very unfortunate. On Thursday, October the 26th, from 6 to 7 p.m., Bonnie Dirtnell, a Guelph resident historian, will be reading from her new book called Haunted Guelph. Please call the Guelph Public Library to register for these events. Next week, our guest is Alicia Ralph. She is the Upper Grand District School Board Human Rights and Equity Advisor, and this is a brand new position. Thank you, everybody, for coming out today. I believe that's a wrap. We'll see you next week.
That's all for today. Thanks for tuning in. Music's provided by Jules Germ and production editing by Scotty Hertz. See you next time.